Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Israel conducts a large-scale manhunt for two Palestinians suspected of killing three Israelis in an operation in the city of Elad. Israel is set to approve nearly 4,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. And at least 18 people are killed in a powerful explosion that hit a hotel in the Cuban capital, Havana. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. The Israeli regime has launched a massive manhunt for the Palestinians behind an attack in the Israeli city of Elad. The operation has so far drawn strong support from Palestinian resistance movements and threats from Israelis. However, no group has yet claimed responsibility for what many are calling a, quote, heroic act.
Two Palestinians have carried out a retaliatory operation in the central Israeli city of Elad, where several casualties were reported. The operation came hours after Israeli forces attacked Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque to make way for hundreds of settlers to enter the holy site in Al-Quds. Over a dozen Palestinians were injured and many more arrested in the raid on Thursday. The retaliation also coincides with the Nakba, the anniversary of the illegal creation of Israel. Palestinian resistance movements have praised the operation as a natural response to Israeli crimes.
Operation Elad is part of the public display of our people's anger at the invasion of our sanctuaries by the occupiers. Today's operation goes in line with resistance's warning that the Al-Aqsa Mosque is a red line.
We hail the successful and heroic operation in occupied Al-Quds and remind Israel that our people will respond to the regime's crimes.
President Mahmoud Abbas, however, condemned the operation and warned against the Israelis making this incident a pretext to target the Palestinians. The operation comes against the backdrop of the regime's intensified acts of violence across the occupied West Bank, including targeting Muslim worshippers at Al-Aqsa. Over the past weeks, tensions have been running high at the mosque compound due to incursions by Israeli settlers protected by regime forces. Hundreds of Palestinians have been injured in the latest attacks. Dozens have been arrested.
An occupying force continuously trample on the rights of the subjugated people, trample on their religious beliefs, wipe their feet on sacred shrines, and expect that this people will simply lay down and continue to take it without responding.
As a consequence of Israel's atrocities, the Palestinians have ramped up retaliatory attacks in Israeli cities. An Israeli minister has said the regime suffered a very heavy price in the Elad operation. And now Israel has once again revved up its crackdown machine against the Palestinians through arresting dozens of people and closing the crossings to the West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip, actions that will undoubtedly escalate the already tense circumstances in the occupied territories.
Israel is set to approve 4,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank. In our news review program, we've discussed the regime's illegal settlement activity and the silence of the international community on the issue. Here's the full story and our guests' take on the matter.
And now welcome everyone to the news review program, where we get in-depth in one of the day's top stories. Israel is set to approve nearly 4,000 new settler units in the occupied West Bank as the regime pushes its expansionist policy on Palestinian land. In a tweet, Israel's interior minister said a planning committee will meet next week to ratify the new construction. In reaction, the Palestinian Authority has warned of serious consequences in an already tense West Bank if the settlement project goes ahead. This will be the largest settlement plan by the regime since U.S. President Joe Biden took office. All Israeli settlements are illegal under international law. And now joining us for the program is Jim Cavanaugh, founder of thepolemicist.net out of New York, and Daniel Lazar, journalist and author also out of New York. Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Daniel, we'll start with you. Your thoughts, we know there's so much tension right now in occupied territories, and usually the crux of it is the settlements. Your thoughts on more settlements trying to get approved by the Israeli regime as an answer to the escalation of tensions?
Well, I mean, the settlements are racially discriminatory. They're for Jews only. They bar Palestinians. Number one. Number two, they're on illegally acquired land. Number three, they grossly interfere with the ability of Palestinians to make their way around their own communities. These are atrocious policies that could only make a bad situation worse. But the Israeli government clearly doesn't care because it believes it has the upper hand, and therefore feels free to do what it wants to do to the Palestinians, and has no concerns whatsoever about international opprobrium or international opinion of any sort whatsoever.
Thank you, Daniel. And Jim, I'd like to welcome you to the program. Your initial thoughts on the story, Jim?
Well, yes, as Dan said, you know, the Israelis are confident nobody's going to come after them for this. The United States isn't going to do anything to them. The European Union isn't going to do anything to them. They might be a few little bleats of protest, but they're going to continue to get all the financial, military, and diplomatic aid that they need to pursue this. You know, and we have to understand this is the continuation of the Nakba, which is not over. This is the continuation of the Israeli colonial settler project to seize the land of the indigenous population, to render them as homeless, stateless, and without rights, and as not second-class citizens, but negligible people in terms of history and politics of the world. And they are convinced they can get away with that, and they have largely gotten away with it because they've been supported primarily by the United States, but also by the European countries in that project. And we have to recognize it's not over, it's not finished, it's still going on, and we should recognize it for what it is, settler colonialism. And the people who are being colonized and occupied by international law have the right to resist by any means necessary.
And Daniel, how does Israel get away with it? How does it, in 2022, Israel usurps and ethnically cleanses and Washington says nothing?
Well, that's the very important question. And in fact, Israel's power vis-a-vis the Palestinians has only grown. And Israel, it's not only the U.S., by the way. That's something of a myth, actually something of a myth. U.S. military aid to Israel has declined as the Israeli economy has grown. And in fact, Israel has quite an independent foreign policy, where it has established excellent relations with a wide range of states. Hungary, the Ukraine. Volodymyr Zelensky recently declared that his goal is to transform the Ukraine into another Israel, a second Israel on the Black Sea. So Israel's model is actually growing in popularity worldwide. The balance of power is shifting in its favor, and the Palestinians are losing ever more severely. Now, you can ask yourself, why is that the case? I mean, one reason certainly is that the entire world is galloping to the right and just doesn't really care anymore about what's done to, you know, the harms that are inflicted on colonial peoples. But another problem, of course, are the mistakes and errors committed by the Palestinian movement, which have consistently played to real strengths rather than to its weaknesses, undermining their own position and essentially helping Israel establish its dominance over the region.
And Jim, do you think that we'll see a time where Washington gets fed up with Israel's actions and atrocities against Palestinians because of the way it reflects back on Washington itself?
Well, I don't foresee it in the near future. Washington is not being hurt by it. Look, the major media and ideological institutions of the West certainly are committed to Zionism as a virtuous project that has to be supported. And the United States political cast and media cast and political cast are committed to Zionism. That hasn't changed. Now, I do think that the ideological appeal of Zionism has changed, and that among masses of people, it's lost the argument, even among young Jews in the United States. And people recognize it as a colonial enterprise and as an indefensible colonial enterprise. But as Dan says, that hasn't translated into political power. And the Palestinian Authority has been a police force for Israel and has been there to maintain the fiction of a possible two-state solution, which all of these recent seizures of land and building of settlements are continually putting an end to. It put an end to it a long time ago, but that fiction is still being maintained. So you have a very difficult situation that's kind of pulling in contradictory ways. On the one hand, I think Israel has lost its ideological legitimacy largely among populations. But on the other hand, the political and media caste that controls the world, it's still very much supported.
And Daniel, why does Israel push for so many, not just a few, but so many settlements? It's approving thousands bi-monthly, it seems like, when it knows that these settlements and the construction of these settlements only ensure perpetual tensions, perpetual violence on both sides, not to mention they lack any humanity or equity and are illegal.
Yes, that's all quite correct. One important reason is that, number one, is the West Bank is the historical heartland of Israel and Judah, the ancient kingdoms of Israel and Judah. So that was always been the prime target of the Zionist movement, what it wanted to take over. So therefore, the Israeli state really can't resist moving to these areas because they are under intense pressure from the most committed, fervent, and right-wing Zionists to establish a presence in what is the historical heartland of ancient Israel. So that's why they feel obliged. You know, so the Gaza, for example, is much less important to Israel ideologically and historically than the West Bank is. So that's why Israel was happy to abandon the Gaza Strip, but why it continues to build settlements in the West Bank.
And final thoughts with you there, Jim. So when the Israelis, they have all the money, the lobbying influence, the arms. What recourse do Palestinians have left at their disposal to try to get some equity?
It's a very good question. They must, you know, organize and fight with unity. And unfortunately, as I said, you know, the Palestinian Authority is an obstacle to that. It's hard to figure out what the exact right course is to do. You know, they're justified in fighting, but they're fighting an enemy that's stronger to them in a military or armed sense. Their armed struggle would be hard to win in some way. I don't think they can win without causing damage to Israel, but I think they're likely to get smashed if they do it. So it's a very, very difficult situation. And the Israelis are going to continue because they can't have a stable Zionist entity with so many Palestinians under their control. They have to get rid of them eventually. The Nakba has to continue for them to be stable in the West Bank. So they're going to try and do this a few thousand people at a time, but it's a very difficult project for Israel, too. Everybody in this is in a situation which is likely just to get worse and worse and to end up with incidences like we've seen. And I think the Israelis have been able to control largely any kind of military action against them, but I don't think they can do that forever either.
All right, gentlemen, good stuff. Stay safe, both of you, and thank you for joining us on the program. Jim Kavanaugh and Daniel Lazar, both out of New York. And viewers, that's a wrap for this segment of News Review Program. Thank you for joining us, and bye-bye for now.
Welcome back. Iran's foreign minister says a sustainable deal in the Vienna talks for the revival of the 2015 deal hinges on a brave and pragmatic decision by the United States to make up for its past mistakes. Hossein Amir Abdullahian says Washington's so-called maximum pressure policy against Iran is to blame for the current situation. Amir Abdullahian also criticized a recent measure passed by U.S. Congress that would hinder efforts to salvage the deal. He made the comments during a phone conversation with United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. The Secretary General also called for continuation of negotiations toward a favorable agreement. On Wednesday, a majority of U.S. senators backed a non-binding Republican-led motion that opposes sanctions relief for Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The issue is said to be a key sticking point in the Vienna talks. The death toll from a powerful explosion that hit a hotel in the Cuban capital Havana rises to 18. Dozens of others are also injured. President Miguel Díaz-Canel says the incident at the historic Hotel Saratoga appears to have been caused by a gas leak. Police are dispatched to the scene and have cordoned off nearby government buildings. Rescue operations are currently underway to locate people trapped under the debris. Russia says it has no intention of using nuclear weapons in the Ukraine war. The foreign ministry slams a scope of deliberate lies, reports by Western media suggesting the possibility of a nuclear strike by Moscow. Listen.
As I have already said, we have repeatedly had to refute insinuations about Russia's possible use of nuclear weapons in the course of its special military operation in Ukraine. This is a deliberate lie. Russia firmly adheres to the principle that there can be no winners in a nuclear war.
Zaitsev said Russia's use of nuclear weapons in Ukraine is ruled out since it's not in line with the objectives of its military operation there. Russia's ambassador to Washington has also reacted to the Western accusation. Anatoly Antonov says such called baseless allegations are part of a propaganda campaign. The diplomat also accused the West of misinterpreting Moscow's recent decision to place its nuclear forces on high alert. He said the move was in response to extremely confrontational statements by Western countries that possess nuclear weapons. And Kiev says at least 50 people have been evacuated from a besieged steel plant in the Russian-held city of Mariupol in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine's deputy prime minister says another round of evacuations is scheduled for Saturday. The UN-brokered operation aims to transfer civilians trapped inside the Azovstal factory. Some 500 civilians have already been removed from the site, while an estimated 200 others remain trapped there. The plant is the last part of Mariupol still held by Ukrainian forces. On Thursday, Russia announced a daytime ceasefire for 3 days to allow civilians to get out of the city. But Ukraine says there's been no pause in fighting at Azovstal. And that's a wrap for this hour's World News. Thanks for your company. Stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Over the next 50 years, climate change could drive more than 15,000 new cases of mammals transmitting viruses to other mammals, according to a study published in Nature. Stay with us for an article in this regard, written by Natasha Gilbert Ryder. This article is published under the heading, Climate Change Will Force New Animal Encounters and Boost Viral Outbreaks. Here's the details.
Thank you.
Over the next 50 years, climate change could drive more than 15,000 new cases of mammals transmitting viruses to other mammals, according to a study published in Nature. It's one of the first to predict how global warming will shift wildlife habitats and increase encounters between species capable of swapping pathogens, and to quantify how many times viruses are expected to jump between species. Many researchers say that the COVID-19 pandemic probably started when a previously unknown coronavirus passed from a wild animal to a human, a process called zoonotic transmission. A predicted rise in viruses jumping between species could trigger more outbreaks, posing a serious threat to human and animal health alike, the study warns, providing all the more reason for governments and health organizations to invest in pathogen surveillance and to improve healthcare infrastructure. The study is a critical first step in understanding the future risk of climate and land use change on the next pandemic, says Kate Jones, who models interactions between ecosystems and human health at University College London. The research predicts that much of the new virus transmission will happen when species meet for the first time as they move to cooler locales because of rising temperatures. And it projects that this will occur most often in species-rich ecosystems at high elevations, particularly areas of Africa and Asia, and in areas that are densely populated by humans, including Africa's Sahel region, India, and Indonesia. Assuming that the planet warms by no more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial temperatures this century, a future predicted by some climate analysis, the number of first-time meetings between species will double by 2070, creating virus transmission hotspots, this study says. Gregory Albury, a disease ecologist at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and a co-author of the study, said, "This work provides us with more incontrovertible evidence that the coming decades will not only be hotter, but sicker." To make their predictions, Albury and his colleagues developed and tested models and ran simulations over a 5-year period. They combined models of virus transmission and species distribution under various climate change scenarios, focusing on mammals because of their relevance to human health. The team built the species distribution model to predict where mammals would move to find more livable habitats as the planet warms. The virus transmission model predicts the probability of a virus jumping between a species for the first time by taking into account where species might meet as their habitat shift and how closely related they are evolutionary. The modeling seems technically impeccable, says Ignacio Morales Castilla, a global change ecologist at the University of Spain, although he points out that forecasting exercises such as this sometimes needs to include unrealistic assumptions, but he adds that the breadth and scope of the research and its ability to identify which parts of the world might be most at risk clearly stand out. One assumption the researchers had to make was about how far and wide species would spread as the little climate changes. But factors such as whether mammals can adapt to local conditions or physically cross barriers in landscapes are difficult to predict. Bats are projected to be involved in viral transmission regardless of these factors, the study found. Thought to be part of the origins of COVID-19, bats are known reservoirs of viruses and make up about 20% of mammals. The team says that in part because bats can fly, they are less likely to experience barriers to shifting their habitats. Although Jones applauds the study, she urges caution when discussing its implications for human health. Predicting the risk of viral jumps from mammals into humans is more tricky, as these spillovers take place in a complex ecological and human socioeconomic environment, she says. Many factors could reduce the risk to human health, including increased investment in healthcare or a virus being unable to infect humans for some reason, she adds. But the researchers urge that there is no time to waste. Earth has already warmed by more than 1 degree Celsius above pre-industrial temperatures, and this is driving species migration and disease swapping. It's happening, and it's not preventable, even in the best climate change scenarios, Albury says. Albury and one of his co-authors, Colin Carlson, a global change biologist, also at Georgetown University, say that even though some increase in disease transmission is inevitable, that is no excuse for inaction. The researchers call on governments and international community to improve the monitoring and surveillance of wild animals and zoonotic diseases, particularly in future hotspots such as Southeast Asia. Improving health infrastructure is also essential, they say. As people begin to prepare for and adapt to global warming, most efforts focus on activities such as halting deforestation or reinforcing sea walls. But Carlson says pandemic preparedness and disease surveillance are climate change adaptation too.
Food for thought.
Salam, dear friends, and let us contemplate on what Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, has said about the kind hands that human beings have. Hands are three: the begging hand, the giving hand, and the grasping hand. The best of hands is the giving hand.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wassalam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
زيارة of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim عليه السلام.
السلام عليك يا مولاي موسى ابن جعفر ورحمة الله.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led a life which was in balance and harmony with that of the Prophet Muhammad, his great-great-grandfather. His life and the life of Imam al-Kazim was in the line and the direction of the Prophet Muhammad. And of course, the life of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam was a strict adherence and obedience of Islam. In so many different ways, whether it was his ethics, his morals, his behaviors, his actions, his statements, we find that Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the copy of the Holy Prophet Muhammad of Islam, the messenger of Allah. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led an upright, righteous and noble life. These are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام لما سئل عن أوجب الأعداء مجاهدة أقربهم إليك وأعداهم لك ومن يحرض أعداءك عليك وهو إبليس.
Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was once asked who one's arch enemy is that one must fight, to which he replied, it is he who is closest to you and yet harbors the most enmity towards you, and he who provokes all your enemies against you, and he is Iblis or Satan.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, when talking about the conversations and the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam, of course, this divinely appointed Imam from the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, we find that Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam has this beautiful conversation with one of his sons. And so when speaking to his son, Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam says to him, beware of joking, for it takes away the light of your faith and makes other people belittle and ridicule your manhood. It's interesting, dear friends, but we have a tendency sometimes to really joke in excess. Now here, making us a humble joke or a simple joke every now and then is not a bad thing. Rather, it is recommended to smile, it is recommended to laugh. Of course, not in excess. hear, as Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam says, an excess of laughing, an excess of joking. It takes away the light of our iman. Now, you know, these are jokes that are within the confines of the Sharia, the Islamic regulations. We're not even talking about jokes that are vulgar, jokes that are inappropriate, jokes that are crude and cruel and rude. These shouldn't be done at all, at any time. Jokes that have inappropriate context to them, these are not at the level of an honor of a righteous human being and a noble human being and a good Muslim. The jokes that we are even being aware of are you know, normal, simple, funny jokes. But even then, Imam al-Kadhim says, beware of joking too much, for an excess of laughing, an excess of laughing too loud, an excess of joking too much, it will take away the light of our faith. And of course, jokes that are vulgar and inappropriate, or jokes that are made at the expense of other people's, when we make fun of other people, this not only takes away the light of our faith, it destroys our faith, and it adds to the sins that we have committed, especially when we hurt the feelings of another human being, of a fellow righteous human being, and a believer. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Attar, the producer of this program, and at this moment, I want you to listen to a shorter speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
Mansur al-Dawaniqi was the Khalifa as well, and after him comes Mahdi Abbasi, who was also a very fearful, very dreadful, you know, Khalifa, very tyrant. Then Hadi Abbasi, and then Harun Abbasi, the Harun Rashid, who was the main culprit and who was the person in charge for the martyrdom of the seventh Imam. So we see about six Khulafa, one after the other came, and they persecuted the Alawiyun, the followers of Ahl Bayt, the Imams. Imam have trained students, Imam have maintained that level of knowledge, that seat of knowledge which Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq alayhi salam had, and he had, you know, propagated and promoted the same knowledge. He has carried it on. I mean, this was a very crucial period from Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam to Imam Radha alayhi salam. You would find that it was intense for the Imam and for the followers of the Imam, you know, to really propagate and to really teach. But Imam managed to really transfer that to the eighth Imam. And then when it comes to the eighth Imam once again, who was known as the Alim-e-Ali Muhammad, the knowledgeable one of the Alim-e-Muhammad, the scholar of Alim-e-Muhammad, right? Because of the debates that the Imam have.
Listening to this episode of Dialogue, don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en, Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting the country's most high-profile robotics event, dubbed RoboCop Iran Open. The event seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by holding tournaments. Yusuf Shalali has the story.
They may not be able to face human soccer players just yet, but these robot footballers are taking their baby steps toward achieving this goal. The 16th edition of RoboCop Iran Open brought together 100 teams from across the country to compete in different fields of robotics and artificial intelligence, with a focus on soccer robots.
Our robot is a soccer player that moves with its wheels. It's totally different from humanoid robots, but it can certainly challenge them and beat them in a football match.
We have taken part in the Maze League of the RoboCop games. It's the first time I'm involved in this big competition, where I have to implement all my programming, mechanics and electronics skills to win the game. I am so excited.
Organizers say RoboCop seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by offering IT experts a real-time challenge to build the most capable robots.
The idea of RoboCop competitions is to increase the creativity of IT experts in developing efficient robots. Why soccer? Because first of all, it is a highly popular sport, and second, it is a highly strategic game that requires a robot to perform many difficult tasks, which, if accomplished, can turn them into strong and capable robots.
RoboCop Iran Open is part of the international initiative dubbed Robot Soccer World Cup, or shortly, RoboCop. The event was first launched in 1997 and was inspired by the victory of a computer chess player against the then world chess champion, Garry Kasparov. The official goal of the competition, as stated by its organizers, is to hone the capabilities of humanoid robot soccer players so that they will win a soccer game against the winner of the most recent FIFA World Cup in mid-21st century.
While robots still have a long way to go before they can challenge the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, the ultimate goal of RoboCop is not about robot footballers beating human rivals, but the technology advances that can be made along the way to improve our lives. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
There is a lot to be worried about when it comes to the climate. An Indian auto rickshaw driver in the capital, New Delhi, has come up with an innovative idea to beat the scorching heat wave. He has built a garden on the roof of his vehicle to keep passengers cool. Mahendra Kumar's vehicle, dubbed Moving Garden, stands out among others with its unique rooftop. He has grown vegetables, flowers and a variety of herbs and shrubs on the small roof space. Kumar says it was easy to make the garden by spreading a thick sack over a mat and covering it with soil. Then he added the plants, watered them and watched them grow.
Around 2 years ago, I had this idea during the peak of the summer season. I thought if I can grow some plants on the roof, it will keep my auto rickshaw cool and give relief from the heat to my passengers.
Kumar says the thick green keeps his three-wheeler cool even when temperatures reach 45 degrees Celsius. The rickshaw driver has also installed small fans inside for the comfort of passengers as an extra measure. His passengers say they feel cool because of the natural air conditioner. Kumar's rickshaw attracts many commuters for obvious reasons, and passers-by also stop to take selfies. museum in France is hosting treasures of Peru, including the famed Machu Picchu, in a unique experience where technology meets archaeology. Visitors can immerse themselves in a vertical tour of Machu Picchu Citadel and see an exclusive exhibit of Peruvian archaeological objects. The collection is arranged chronologically, passing through the extraordinary diversity of some 13 cultures. The collection displays 200 artifacts spanning three millennia, dating as far back as 1500 BC. A large part of the exhibit is dedicated to Peru's Machica civilization with their vase portraits and red ceramics. The museum's curator says the goal was to show that pre-Columbus Peru was far deeper than just the Inca era. These days, it's easier than ever to get lost in the virtual world. A unique museum in the U.S. is using augmented reality for visitors to plug into a thrilling experience about the Earth's environmental challenges. The New York Museum is called Arcadia Earth. It offers a large-scale, multisensorial journey through underwater worlds, mountains, savannas, and inspirational fantasy lands. Each exhibit is brought to life through immersive technology and animated by augmented and virtual reality, including projection mapping. One installation is made of 44,000 plastic bags, the amount used in New York every minute before a plastic bag ban was implemented. The museum founder says the goal is to raise awareness about the impacts of climate change in a fun way.
The intention is to inspire people to come and leveraging game and immersive beauty to deliver a message. And I think that if this technique were to be used in school, we will so learn much more, and every kid will want to go to school. And at the end of the day, the purpose is just to deliver the message. The tools are just techniques. So I really think that this technique, it's super fun and will work for everyone.
Vittori added that the experience is meant to encourage people to be proactive in protecting the planet. The exhibit also spotlights other environmental challenges such as overfishing and food waste. Proceeds from tickets sold are used to plant mangrove trees. This exhibit has been held in several cities across the United States, and each time proceeds have been used to support various environmental causes.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Appearing like something straight out of a sci-fi movie, this Gundam-style robot lifts off special equipment and carries out maintenance work on out-of-reach railway contact lines in Japan. Developed by West Japan Railway Company JR West and two other Japanese companies, the humanoid robot can conduct repair work on overhead wires, which are considered high risk for humans. According to JR West, the prototype of this robot can be controlled by human operators through VR helmets and remote controls. It can lift objects up to 40 kilograms in weight with two hands to a height of 10 meters. It was designed to lower the risk of electrocution and falling for workers. The company says it can cut down human labor by a third. The company has been conducting tests since April and expects to put the robot into full service by early 2024.
A child-sized doll screams and rolls its eyes while lying on a table as engineer Hiroki Takimoto looks on calmly. But instead of being a child's toy, the doll is a humanoid robot mimicking critical medical symptoms designed to train dental workers. The robot was co-developed by Japanese robotic startups Team Sock and a local dental school. Pediaroid was designed to stimulate a child's responses when receiving dental treatment, including changes to its medical condition. Using a tablet programmed with different medical conditions, the user is able to send signals to air cylinders installed within the robot's joints to move its entire body, mouth, and tongue to display physical reactions and facial expressions.
Medical workers really need to experience medical emergencies. It's important that they experience a situation where something goes wrong, and that's what it can simulate. As for the future, we would like to further develop it in such a way that various other people who are involved with childcare, such as mothers, elementary school teachers, childcare workers, and nurses, can experience emergency simulations.
Director of Team Sock's engineering division, Yusuke Ishii, said the robot was developed due to the lack of clinical dental training to treat children. Currently, at a hefty price tag of about 25 million Japanese yen, Team Sock hopes to develop the hyper-realistic robot further such that people from other childcare industries, including pediatricians and elementary school teachers, would be able to use it for other emergency situation training.
Iran's National Museum is displaying a collection of artifacts that was stolen decades ago but has finally returned home after a long legal battle. The items, which include sacred figurines, pots and jars, date back to more than 3,000 years ago. They were stolen and sent to the West more than four decades ago. In 1991, the British Museum was seeking to buy the collection from a smuggler residing in Switzerland. The objects, however, were seized by Swiss police and revealed in court in 2008. Since then, Iran had been trying to get the stolen treasures back home.
Under pressure from the Iranian diplomatic apparatus and the official complaints of the National Museum in 2015, the legal process continued, and finally on December 20, 2020, the collection returned to us.
The collection belongs to the northwestern city of Bukhan, which was the home of Manians around the 10th to 7th centuries BC. The Manians were one of the first nomadic tribes to build cities in that area. The director of Iran's National Museum says the effort to recover other stolen artifacts continues. The country is now holding talks with the US and Australia to return ancient objects smuggled over there.
How long could you work at your job? In Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Ortman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Othman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
There will be no prosecution of Saudi Arabian rulers for their war crimes committed in Yemen or for the U.S. military and political leadership for the war crimes they carried out in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya, or a generation earlier in Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos, says Chris Hedges, journalist, in an article published under the heading War Crimes and the Lie of American Innocence. Stay tuned for more. We know who the most recent war criminals are. Coming others: George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, General Ricardo Sanchez, former CIA Director George Tenet, former Assistant Attorney General J. Bybee, former Department Assistant Attorney General John Yoo, who set up the legal framework to authorize torture, the helicopter pilots who gunned down civilians, including two Reuters journalists in the collateral murder video released by WikiLeaks. We have evidence of